This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
We also do a lot in terms of defaults to protect teens when they open their first account. We default teens into private accounts, meaning that your account won't be visible by people you don't follow. People you don't follow or are connected with won't be able to see any content that you post. They won't be able to tag or mention you. They won't be able to see the people you follow or who follows you. We also default teens into private messaging, meaning that, again, like, adults or even teens that you're not connected with won't be able to message you. We default teens into a different experience than adults. And I think that's something that people don't always know. An adult's experience is going to be really different than a teen's. You're going to see different content than a teen sees. There are more restrictions that are built in to protect teens by default. And that's a really, really fundamental thing that I think parents often don't realize, because we experience Instagram like you and I do, but what we're seeing and the experiences that we're having are not the same as teens.
There is no hood like parenthood. Hi, I'm Kanika Chadda Gupta. I'm a former CNN journalist, mom of three, including twins, and host of That's Total Mom Sense, the podcast. Now, if I had a dollar every time I heard, gee, you have your hands full. On my show, I interview change makers on their life lessons, legacy, and superpower of intuition, which I call our mom sense and dad sense. I've had the privilege of working with Mom 2.0, March of Dimes, and the White House, and have had some pretty amazing parents on my show.
Hey, what's up? I'm Kelly Rowland.
Hi, this is Chelsea Clinton.
It's me, Bobby Brown. Can't wait to share my story.
That's Total Mom Sense is a production of the Evergreen Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and on YouTube so you never miss an episode. To join my tribe, visit thatstotalmomsense.com and follow me on Instagram at Kanika Chadda Gupta. Now let's dive in to today's episode.
Isn't it fascinating that the advent of social media, which has become a part of our vernacular, it was just 2 decades ago. I still remember how we use platforms like MySpace and Friendster and meetup groups to connect with people in our area. But there's only a handful that could stand the test of time and iterate through the years. Meta, the parent company of Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, is a behemoth in this space, and we all know it. Facebook garners 2.8 billion monthly active users, Instagram at 1 billion. TikTok is growing to a billion, and others like LinkedIn, Snapchat, and Pinterest are in the hundreds of millions and have some ways to go. Millennials are the first generation to be raising kids who were born into social media, so there's a lot to unpack in the conversations here. Today, I am thrilled to be joined by my friend, Nicole Lopez. She is the Global Youth Policy Director at Meta. We're going to speak to all the adverse effects of technology and how we can channel it for good, especially among tweens and teens who are most impressionable. Nicole is an experienced trust and safety executive and attorney with a proven track record at building and quickly scaling legal, privacy, and trust and safety functions in high-growth tech startups. She lives in the Bay Area with her husband and 2 boys. Nicole, welcome to That's Total Mom Sense.
I am so excited to be here, Kanika. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. Me too. I love being on this journey with you. And I want to just tell the audience about how it all started. So yes. We met at a lunch and learn that was hosted for parenting creators at Meta, and you took it on the road and had many different cities. I got to go to the one in New York, and it was just the most amazing afternoon. I'm so glad you and Liza and Carly and the team took us through a presentation of parental controls and, you know, all the tips and tricks that we should know as we use Instagram and help our tweens do the same. But also, we just cultivated these friendships, which just touches my heart.
Yeah, I've got to say, meeting you and the other woman there was awesome to teach you a little bit more about the work that we do. But also, I did feel like we forged a number of friendships. And so expanding the mom circle is always something I love doing. So I'm glad we're getting to meet again.
Yes. Oh, it's the best. Okay, so now we're going to take it back to our childhood, which is always so fun. I love like the nostalgia. How did you interact with those early years of social media?
I went to college by the time that social media landed. Mm-hmm. So I can hypothesize and tell you how I would have engaged with social media if it had been around when I was 13 or 14 years old. So this is really like going back in time to little Nicole. I'm very petite. I was an activist. I think I would have used it to connect with like-minded teens on a global level. And what I mean by that is I grew up in a household, Kanika, where we always had like five conversations at the dinner table. And there were five of us at the dinner table. My mom was, she's retired now, but she was a journalist. And she actually was at Columbia in the 60s. And was one of their first political activists. So she helped stage some of the walkouts. My dad, also just retired, was a trial attorney. And so he worked on everything from antitrust cases to civil rights cases, taking on a lot of pro bono cases. And they raised us in a household where advocating both for yourself, but also on behalf of others was really fundamental. It was just one of the values in our house. And that led to my mom taking me to my first protest with some of the girls in my class in fifth grade. So I was out in the streets of San Francisco protesting the Gulf War. You know, as a teenager, I came into my own and really found that advocating for things that I believed in, that I was really passionate, made me tick. In Oakland, they had yanked funding for instruments. And so one of my best friends and I took it upon ourselves to, you know, find funding and to try to figure out a way to get instruments for kids who weren't going to have instruments the following year. So my point is, I was always motivated to use my voice. And I think if social media had been around, I probably would have done it on a much larger scale. And I would have connected with teens outside the Bay Area. And I would have done more, I think.
That's brilliant. I love that. I mean, I remember I feel like we were on the same age. AIM came out, I think my last year of high school. Yeah, I just found it as a place to kind of be aimless. And I guess it was like the equivalent of texting because we didn't have smartphones. So what are you up to? And, you know, I'm going to write my away message. And that was just cool. But yes, you can use this as a vehicle for change, and that's the greater good that it provides. I think that's really brilliant because most kids are like, oh, I'm going to just faff around, you know?
And that's good too, you know, flapping around, you know, figuring out what works for you. I was just super motivated and knew what I wanted from a young age.
Yes, yes. And what were some of the life lessons that you know, you learned that you're passing on to your kids today?
I guess empathy is another one that I would highlight that my parents did a good job of reinforcing in our household and that I try with my kids to teach them, you know, to put themselves in other shoes and to be totally candid. This is something that I apply in the workplace. So it's not like it ends once your childhood ends. I think that like you need to have empathy in all sorts of situations in life and it really benefits you. Another value was connections. My parents are, I would say, my dad is more of an extrovert, my mom probably less so, but they always put us in situations where they encouraged us to connect with others, even if they were really different from us. Right. And so that's something that I try to put my kids in situations, even if they don't necessarily want to go somewhere or be in a social situation, I don't force them ever, but I try to create these opportunities where they foster those connections to people who maybe they don't necessarily bond with.
Yes, yes. Oh, I love that. And now let's dive into your career. Tell us a bit about your trajectory.
So as I said, my dad was a lawyer and I watched him in court when I was a kid. So he would bring me to some of his trials and I would sit in the courtroom. I have a lot of stories and I loved it. I think from the age of 9 or 10, I knew that I wanted to be a lawyer. And predictably, even though I ended up majoring in history and I did AmeriCorps after college and I also fiddled in a bluegrass band, I somehow landed in law school. I took on, you know, the traditional path of going to a big firm. And when I got there, I realized that it didn't really provide the meaningful opportunities that I thought and experiences that I thought I would get. So I was really relegated to an office where I was sitting and doing research and writing all day long, which, by the way, is a great skill set, I think, to have. But it wasn't getting me the connections, going back to values. And I didn't feel like I was helping people other than helping the partner I worked right. with. So at a certain point, I thought, you know what? I don't want to quit being a lawyer, but I want to see what the other side of the house looks like and what it looks like to be in the government, either working as a prosecutor or a public defender. And I ended up getting loaned out to the local DA's office. And that really ignited for me a passion for, again, what I cared about when I was a kid growing up, advocacy. And to be totally clear, Konica, I sucked when I first started. I got there. I think my dad and my brother came to one of my first trials, and my brother said, "Are you sure you want to pivot to becoming a prosecutor?" But I didn't care. I loved it. Yeah. It felt good. I felt like I was helping victims. I felt like I was helping to protect the community. And so I left the big salary, became a government employee, and I happily, you know, jumped into prosecution work for about 8.5 years. And it started off, you know, being a baby DA where you're prosecuting DUIs and batteries and assaults. And then over time, I found my true passion, which was working on domestic violence cases and wow. really focusing on child cases. So child abuse cases, child endangerment, child exploitation cases, and then eventually landed in the Community Violence Reduction Unit, which was a quasi drug cartel, gang cases. And again, a lot of these were focused on youth in the communities. So that was what I did for a pretty long stint of my career. And then, of course, having kids kind of threw in another pivot. And that's when I started, you know, looking at my career trajectory and where I wanted to be down the road and what kind of impact I wanted to have. And through a series of meetings and, you know, discussions, I ended up moving into tech. And I was very focused, again, on not just any tech job, but I wanted to do something that related to my passion of working on issues that impact children. So I ended up joining a Uber for Kids startup, which had a lot of risks there, you can imagine. And then eventually went to OutSchool, which is an ed tech company. I don't know if you know it, but it's live online classes for kids. It boomed during the pandemic. And I was there for almost 2.5 years when Meta reached out to me for this role. So that's the path that I took. So it was a number of pivots. And then why Meta, you're probably asking. First, obviously, it still is an exciting time. But at the time that I was interviewing and I got the job offer, you know, things were developing really quickly. The opportunity to join at that juncture to me was alluring because I wanted to have a huge impact on shaping teens' online experiences. And to that point, I think the other, you know, reason that I wanted to join was impact. You said it at the beginning. We reach billions of people. And to go from OutSchool, which was, you know, I think about 1 million users at its peak, to millions of teens, billions of people, also to me, it was a sizable impact. And so that to me was a great opportunity. I worked with some Meta people in a cross-industry group called Tech Coalition. So I'd met some of the Meta people and they impressed me over and over again in these cross-industry meetings, both in terms of the tech that they were developing, the mensches that they were. They're good people. And when I interviewed with my now boss, you know, as a prosecutor, I learned to read people really, really quickly. And within 3-4 minutes of meeting her, I knew that I wanted to work for her. And to this day, I still feel the same way about her as I did in my initial interview. And having a good boss matters. It makes a huge difference in your happiness. So those are the reasons I decided to join Meta.
That's so great. And you had the kids before you joined?
I did.
Okay. So tell us a bit about your motherhood journey and surely how that shaped you as a leader.
I mean, frankly, after I had my first kid, I was so career driven. I mean, this really surprised me. I wasn't sure I wanted to go back to work. And I remember delaying my return to work. It was supposed to be a 3-month maternity leave. And then I pushed it to 4, pushed it to 5. And at the 6th month, my husband said, "Do you want to try going back? I think you should try it before you decide to close the door." And I reluctantly went back, and then I loved it. But it's also been a real juggle. And it takes a village. I have a really strong network of family nearby who help, as well as my husband and the soccer mom crew who sometimes pinch hit and drive kids to soccer for me. So it's challenging, but so satisfying. And the other point I would make, Kanika, is I never thought I would know as much about soccer as I know today. Yeah. Like, I never knew anything until I had 2 boys who were obsessed with soccer. We talked a little bit about values, but I think that becoming a parent for me personally has increased my empathy in a major way. I have also become a lot more patient. I have a lot of parents on my team, and I think that now that I'm a parent, I'm a champion of parents. And I am very clear with all of the people on my team that I want them to put their families and themselves first, and that that is most important. And I think our team is incredibly healthy and happy because of that. And people appreciate me as a leader in terms of bringing that, you know, that to our team. So those are some of the ways that I think I have changed both as a parent and that have made me a better leader.
Yes. Wow. We all know that social media is part of life, but we do get to kind of set the boundaries and make decisions as to when to introduce it. Okay, because oftentimes they're going to come to you and say, you know, I want to download this on my phone. What's that age of maturity that they're ready?
I think that every teen is different. I think every kid is different. And I don't think that there's a universal, you are ready at this age. That being said, you know, there are terms of service that govern every platform, and for Meta specifically, you have to be over the age of 13 to use our apps. I also encourage parents to get involved in assessing whether their teen is ready or not, because again, some teens are more mature than others. And, you know, for those parents who do decide that their teens are ready to join Instagram, we have a number of tools and features and resources in place to support parents support their teens to ensure that they're having safe, that they're having age appropriate, and that they're having positive experiences online.
I'm so happy to be part of the Evergreen Network, and I want to share a podcast that I've been tuning into. It's called Hear Her Sports, and it's a show for everyone who loves stories by and about female athletes and women in sport. In each episode, host Elizabeth Emery introduces strong women who've become successful in their sport and far beyond. Over the years, Hear Her Sports has highlighted Olympians, world champions, collegiate stars, and those who have made sports their life through coaching, leading, advocating, building, healing, and organizing. Each amazing woman offers hope, energy, inspiration, advice, and shares tactics and strategies that range from career building to well-being. And they speak on a broad range of topics to her listeners. New shows drop every Thursday, just like That's Total Mom Sense. And you can tune in wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow the show on social at Hear Her Sports. And now back to the interview. Tell us a bit about what your team is responsible for and how they help build safe features for teens and parents to use.
Sure. So I oversee our youth safety policy team, and we are Meta's subject matter experts in youth safety. I have a wonderful team. They're comprised of clinicians, educators, people with backgrounds in public health, and reformed lawyers. And we work alongside our product and policy teams. And I think people always associate Meta with Instagram, but it's not just Instagram. It's all of the apps. So Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp, the virtual reality apps. We work with them to ensure that they're building safe, positive, age-appropriate experiences for teens. And what that means is that anytime they're thinking through either a product or a policy that has implications for teens, we work with them to spot issues, to think through what mitigations we need in place, and then also to bring in the right experts, as well as speaking with teens and with parents to ensure that we are building products that are gonna, again, create those experiences that are good and meaningful for teens and their families. And to that end, we also partner with a number of experts. And it's not just my team, other teams. I mean, Meta's huge. So we have a lot of experts who help us develop these products and policies. But my team specifically works with a couple of different expert advisory groups, our youth advisors. We have an SSI, a suicide and self-injury expert group, and then we have an eating disorder body image expert group. And we bring these experts in because we recognize that we don't necessarily have all of the answers, and we want to bring in people who have the breadth and depth of expertise and also who can provide global perspectives. Teens and their parents want to have meaningful experiences when they're online. And it's not just on Meta's apps, it's online, you know, whether you're gaming, whether you're, you know, surfing on Google, whether you're watching YouTube videos, teens jump from app to app. And specific to our Meta apps, we've built out a number of features to help teens be aware of how they're spending their time and to also help them explore other interests when they're on our apps. So we have a number of time management tools. First, parents can help support their teens by using our parental supervision tools. So if you're a parent and your teen opens their first Instagram account, it's really easy for parents to turn on parental supervision tools, and it gives parents not only the ability to see how much time their teen is spending online, but if you're a parent like me, who wants to use parental controls to set time limits, you can set the number of hours or even the hours of the day that your teen can be on Instagram. Parents can also see who their teen follows, who follows their teen. They can also see if their teen reports content that's problematic or an account that's problematic. And the idea behind parental supervision is that we want to create these opportunities for parents to have dialogues with their teens. We don't want this to be an experience where either teens feel like they're alone when they need help, or parents don't necessarily have visibility into what their teen is doing. So the idea is you bring both together. And in those moments where maybe a teen is reporting somebody or blocking somebody, we give them the nudge to tell their parent about it, and then they can have a conversation. We've also built out this amazing family center that I encourage all of my parent friends to go to, because we have an educational hub, and the experts that I talked about with you a little bit earlier, a lot of them, like Child Mind Institute or Connect Safely or Parent Zone, a number of them, they've written these resources, you know, topics that parents may not know how to raise with their teens, guidelines for parents on how to model good behavior, how to talk to your teen about cyberbullying. So the point I'm trying to make here, Kanika, is that research shows that having parental involvement, not just for younger kids, but for teens as well, is incredibly important. It's beneficial both for the teen and for the parent. And I think overall, we've seen that the more parents are involved, the more satisfied a teen is online. So that's one area of tools that we've built out. Similarly, we also do a lot in terms of defaults to protect teens when they open their first account. We default teens into private accounts, meaning that your account won't be visible by people you don't follow. People you don't follow or are connected with won't be able to see any content that you post. They won't be able to tag or mention you. They won't be able to see the people you follow or who follows you. We also default teens into private messaging, meaning that, again, like, adults or even teens that you're not connected with won't be able to message you. We default teens into a different experience than adults. And I think that's something that people don't always know. An adult's experience is going to be really different than a teen's. You're going to see different content than a teen sees. There are more restrictions that are built in to protect teens by default. And that's a really, really fundamental thing that I think parents often don't realize, because we experience Instagram like you and I do, but what we're seeing and the experiences that we're having are not the same as teens. The other point that I wanted to make too was bullying, because that is an issue that is important to so many of us in the real world, in school. But we also know that bullying in school or elsewhere has connections to what happens online. So we have worked really hard with a number of experts, with teens, with parents, to help us develop a slew of anti-bullying tools. And it ranges from, you know, the ones that you and I know, everybody who has Instagram or Facebook knows, of blocking people or reporting content, to some of the more nuanced, I think, and really sophisticated tools that we've developed, including Restrict, which we developed after we met with a number of teens over time who told us that they didn't necessarily want to defriend or block somebody because the person on the other side knows that they've been blocked. And that doesn't help the bullying issues, which are rampant. And so the Restrict tool allows a teen to effectively put the person on the other side into a room without that person knowing they've been in the room. So you restrict somebody, they can still post on your page, they can still send you messages, but you're not going to see those messages and they won't know it. And you're not going to see those posts and they won't know it. So that's one of the anti-bullying tools. We, of course, don't allow curse words that are like, you know, if there's animosity or somebody's being targeted, those types of words won't pop up on your page. But as we know, bullying is context specific. And sometimes a word that is specific to your experience won't necessarily qualify as violating our community standards. And so we've created this feature, it's a tool that allows you to add words or phrases or emojis that you find problematic to your list of hidden words. And it means you won't see those words. If somebody posts them in a comment or on your page, you won't see them. If they send them to you in a message, you won't see them. So those are some of the anti-bullying tools that we have developed.
That's great. I know that there's a lot of news about how the regulation should be done at the federal level, having a baseline where, much like, you know, we have at the movies or games, there's rated PG, G, PG, PG-13, and R. Content should have these universal ratings, and that way we can restrict it.
We all know that teens, and the research shows this too, that teens are on, you know, dozens, if not more, of apps, right? They jump from app to app to app. And if you as a parent have to consent and do verification for each app that your teen downloads, that means going to 20, 30, 40, 50 apps, providing some kind of proof. And by the way, every app is going to have a different requirement. So you could go to Instagram, you could go to Be Real, you could go to YouTube, you could go to any of these apps, and it could be a credit card that you give them, it could be a selfie. So you're trying to prove the age, and then you also have to consent. So it's super privacy invasive. And frankly, as parents, we're overwhelmed. Everybody knows this, and it's a lot to keep track of. So it isn't feasible. It isn't tenable. So what Meta has proposed is having a one-stop shop to make it easier on parents. And what I mean by that is we want parental consent, because we do think, and the research shows, that parents should be involved. And there are a lot of benefits to having parents give consent to their teens downloading apps, but we want to have it at the app store level so that whenever a teen under 16 wants to use an app, the parent would do the age verification, which, by the way, at the Apple, you know, if you have an Apple phone and you create an account for your kid, you already provide your teen's age. Right. So that's at the app store level. And then anytime your teen wants to download an app, instead of you continually giving your ID or consent on each app, you would literally get a ping at the app store level. My teen wants to download this app. And then you as a parent, A, decide whether you think your teen is ready to download the app, going back to your question about you as the parent know your teen best. And then instead of having to go through these privacy invasive, you know, consent flows, you just agree or you don't agree. And then you have visibility as well into what your teens are doing. So it's a really seamless, easy solution. But Kanika, maybe you have thoughts on what I just said and whether it makes sense or not as a parent.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, my kids are, you know, sub seven, so they haven't come to me with this yet, but I always like to kind of be 10 steps ahead and know what's around the bend. And I'm on the same page. I think this needs to be simplified because our kids surpass us when it comes to figuring things out with technology. They were swiping since they were two. So I think that's also important to note that there's going to be parents that don't have the fluency on these apps. And so they need to be, it needs to be easy, a yes or no. Like if you ask any parent, would you let your 10-year-old watch an R movie? Like it's an unequivocal no.
Of course.
So it's important for parents to lead by example. I want to make sure that, you know, they see that when they're asking me a question or if I have time to talk and kind of be present with them, I put the phone away. That way when they're teenagers, they're not like dismissing you. And then you also can't find a scapegoat and blame the messenger. I feel like this is the landscape that they're used to interacting with friends now. And yes, there are so many, you know, instances where things can go wrong. The values and the time and the investment that we pour into our children, that they make responsible decisions and that they know that they have open lines of communication to come to us. Because yes, if that doesn't exist, they're in the silos and then the parents are in the dark. And it's not the phone's fault.
We need to find ways to make it easier on parents to get insights into what their teens are going through. And yeah, I do think that parental supervision tools are a great way to open up the lines of communication. It starts early, before a teen, you know, you turn 13. And I think building those great habits that you mentioned are core to that experience. So starting young is the way to go.
Exactly. And I think it's important to have kids buy in. I had a guest on the show, Robin Ward, who said that, you know, you can treat your household much like a corporation. And you don't want to be the mean boss that's just telling your kids what to do and they have no like stake in it. Not at all. It's like, okay, let's make this contract. What do you think should go on the contract?
Yes.
How much time do you think is enough? You get really cranky when you're on your phone too much. But then, yes, we also need to numb out and interact on there. So how much time do you think is the right amount of time on there? Or, you know, what apps, you know, make you happy?
Yeah, I would encourage, you know, for those of your listeners who haven't checked out the American Academy of Pediatrics website, they do have a social media plan that you can download and enter this information. And then it gives you an opportunity as a family to talk with your teens about, you know, what you all think is right and to get that buy-in and to come up with an agreement that works for everybody. And again, I don't think it's static. Things are shifting all the time. And I think as parents, we need to be flexible. But also part of being a parent is educating oneself on your teen's passions. And whether it's, you know, for me, I was joking about soccer at the beginning, but whether it's getting up to speed on all things soccer or whether it's understanding, you know, the other day, one of my kids was talking about playing Fortnite with his friends. And I felt ignorant. And so I ended up sitting down with him and talking with him about it as he was playing. And he taught me. Now, not necessarily the game I want to play. I still feel really mixed about him playing it, although he was communicating with his friends and bonding with them. But the point is, you as a parent should invest in understanding what makes your teen tick. And I think part of that is understanding how the apps work. and using our parental supervision tools and getting familiar with our family center articles. And it's really easy to do. And I just can't impress it enough on parents, especially when your teen's getting their first Instagram account. Like, get in with them, co-browse, you know, figure out what content they like. There's so many tools for you as a parent to explore with your teen. You can select favorites in their feed, which means that, you know, they're going to see those posts higher up in the feed and more often. You can learn to pin messages, to pin posts so that the posts that are most positive show up first on your teen's page. You know, you talked about social comparison earlier. You can opt into hiding like counts, right? So if you don't want to have posts in your feed and to see the likes on them, or you don't want to see, you don't want people to see your posts and who's liking them, you can hide them. So the point is, we have all these tools. They're intuitive for teens to use, but I think that as a parent, you should know how to use these tools too, and do it with your teen and bond over it and, you know, follow the same accounts and laugh about, you know, whatever your teen is passionate about. And that, you know, going back to your question about how I would have used social media if I had been a teen and I had my IG account, I definitely would have bonded with my parents over the content that I was following. And if I were doing my, you know, political protests or, you know, shutting down I Love My So-Called Life and starting that club, I would have told my parents about it and probably would have sent them a meme about it. But not every family is the same. The point is, try to connect with your teen over this and use our tools.
Yes. Oh, that's brilliant. Now I want to just tie it up with your mom sense moment and time where you trusted that intuition that we have.
So I'm not a doctor, but I've watched a lot of Grey's Anatomy and I'm currently like rewatching them now. But yeah. So I feel like I can pose and use that lingo, even though I'm not. But when my firstborn was a baby, I started waking up in the middle of the night. You know, we don't sleep when they're small. Still to this day, I have trouble sleeping. I would wake up all the time and I noticed that he would struggle and would be gasping for air. And I would wake my husband up and my husband, you know, shrugged it off and said, it's just, you know, weird sounding snore. But I was convinced it was something else. And I ended up taking him to the doctor and then they sent me to a specialist. And it turned out to be I'm sure there's a medical term for it that I'm forgetting, but it was a floppy larynx. So it was like this like little piece of skin that created this noise. And, you know, the doctor said, look, if it were bigger, we would remove it, but it's small enough that he'll outgrow it and he'll be fine. You know, the mom sense kicked in and I was right and my husband was wrong. So that's one example.
Oh my gosh, Nicole, this was incredible. I'm so glad we had this heart to heart and thank you
for educating
us on, you know, all that we should know as parents as we navigate social media and help our kids do the same. Thank you so, so much for being on the show today.
I loved it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to my episode with Nicole Lopez. It's not easy navigating rearing children in the digital age, but I think it's important for parents to have conversations, gain all the knowledge and do enough data gathering, and sit with your kids and talk to them about what they think is appropriate. Having their buy-in really is key. I want to thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing That's Total Mom Sense wherever you listen. I'd like to give a shout out to one of my listeners who left a review, and they will receive some Mom Sense merch. So all you have to do is email thatstotalmomsense@gmail.com to receive your gift. And this was written in by Simran Sethi, MD. I truly enjoy the variety of topics covered and guests on this podcast. There is so much here for parents at any stage of their parenting journey. Always looking forward to the next episode. Thank you so much, Dr. Sethi. I'm going to have my team send you something very special. It was an honor to have you as a guest on my show. And thanks so much for leaving your review for others to tune in. I appreciate you. For more clips and teasers of That Total Mom Sense, check out my Instagram page at Kanika Chadda Gupta and Threads. I'm so proud to be part of Threadcasters and Threads, where I get to promote the show and more so engage with all of you. I think that's the one missing link, because podcasts are a really great volley between host and guest, but we love getting all of you listeners involved. And so I am definitely doing that on Threads. I post polls and questions and all sorts of topics that allow you to share your inputs. Remember, always trust your mom's sense and dad's sense. Stay strong, super parents. I'll see you next time.